This is Turn It On.
And welcome to episode 49 of Turn It On. My name is Michael J., and this is my podcast. Thank you for joining me once again. We're coming to you, as always, from beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, the center of the musical universe. We're going to give you a healthy dose of rock today. Nashville-based rock band The Ivans are on the program, but before we get to my talk with them, it's time for the People's Choice Award-winning segment of our show. And you should all know by now that I keep making shit up when I introduce it. Yes, folks, it's time for
Stories from the Road!
And that, of course, is the jingle for Stories from the Road. And if I didn't tell you that I made it, you'd think it was put together by a couple 12-year-olds. This week's story comes to you once again from the years I spent in my first band, Exploding Boy, as most of these things do. Way back in the early 90s, long before the days of The Voice, X Factor, American Idol, and America's Got Talent, there was a short-lived national band search and subsequent syndicated national television special that aired once a year called Yamaha's Soundcheck, sponsored and put on, of course, by Yamaha, the company. And it worked like this. Each year, bands would submit their music for review by a panel of judges, and these judges would narrow the field of bands down to about 10, and then fly their A&R people out to see all these bands perform a private showcase in their hometowns. And then the top 5 bands chosen would be flown out to LA to compete on a nationally aired television special. This all sounded pretty exciting to us, so we entered the first year of the contest and made it as far as the round before the judges would fly out, but unfortunately we did not make it any further. This only made us more determined, and we entered once again the next year, and much to our surprise, we managed to make it past all the preliminary rounds of judging. And Yamaha flew 2 judges out to check us out at a daytime showcase at a club called Backstreets in Rochester, New York, that was kind enough to lend us their venue for a few hours. And we invited a bunch of our closest friends and played our hearts out for these 2 judges. And something must have clicked, because we found out just a few days later that we would be one of the 5 bands chosen from a field of over 2,500 from all over the U.S. to be flown out to Hollywood for a 4-day all-expenses-paid trip plus per diem to film a television show competing against 4 other bands for a chance to go and represent the United States at an international battle of the bands to be held in Japan later that year, plus a host of other prizes. We flew out to Hollywood a few months later with stars in our eyes, ready to prove ourselves, and we were by far the youngest and most green of all the bands. Myself and the bassist were 19 at best, and our drummer had just turned 20. The show was hosted by Dweezil Zappa and Holly Robinson Pete, and the judges, you ready for this, included Randy Jackson, John Entwistle, bassist for The Who, Robin Zander, vocalist for Cheap Trick, and world-famous producer and mix engineer Chris Lord-Alge. It was an intimidating panel of guys to walk on stage in front of, but we got to play 2 songs back-to-back, and they and the audience all seemed to really like what we did. Unfortunately, despite this, another one of the bands ended up winning the day. It was a devastating loss for me personally and for the band, and one of a multitude of lessons in just how hard the music business can be. We went home very proud of our achievement nonetheless, and with a renewed sense of purpose. And the show aired on New Year's Eve later that year, and we got to enjoy the fact that almost every single person we knew, friends, family, and otherwise, in every part of the country, got to watch our band perform completely live on national television. Pretty cool. And that is this week's installment of
Stories from the Road!
Believe it or not, video of this performance does indeed exist, and it is up on my YouTube channel. I'll post a link to that under the show notes for this episode if you want to check it out, and I'll probably share it on Facebook as well so you can all get a good laugh at young, green as hell, 19-year-old me with hair down to my shoulders, trying not to puke from nervousness in front of Randy Jackson and John Entwistle. It's something. Okay, My guests on the show today are Nashville-based band The Ivins. They messaged me to see if I would consider having them on the show a little while back, and after checking out some of their music and really digging it, we set up a talk. I met up with brothers Jim and Jack Ivins at their place here in Nashville, and we had a chat on the deck behind their house. Their guitarist Hatton Taylor popped in also during the middle of our chat and joined in a little, and we had a really fun time. I will say that Jack Ivins gives what I think might be the best story from the road that I've heard on the show so far. So stick with us to get to that towards the end of the talk. And also, we recorded this outside, so you're going to hear all kinds of outside noises, like trains and sirens and bugs. I couldn't get rid of any of that stuff, so it's going to be almost like you're there with us outside on a warm spring night here in Tennessee. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy my talk with The Ivins. I guess we'll just, well, we're on the, this is awesome, being outside. This is the first outdoor situation.
Outside all day, too.
It was the perfect day for it, and I was like, dude, I got the fucking porch, like, let's just do it out here.
I know nothing about you guys at all, other than, you know, you're the first people to contact me and say, can I be on the show? And so, like, for me, I'm like, absolutely. You're going to ask to be on it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I checked out the newest single, Certain. Mm-hmm. Fucking loved it. That was really great.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that.
So tell me a little bit. I guess I want to touch on two different things to start off here. I'll get your background. We'll kind of go back from there. But
yeah, man.
Start with the, we're rolling. I just roll it. So I read something on one of your posts, I think, where you were kind of talking about, like, you almost kind of called it quits, and then sort of like, this has come back from that.
Yes.
And I want to start with that, because that's, to me, I think we all go through that.
It's a long part. If you want to go there.
But that's good. We have all the time.
We got nothing going on. We can talk about it all night.
Let's do the hour version. Let's keep it condensed.
When did you guys start out? How long were you a band before the oh my god, we probably might want to quit this kind of thing?
Well, so, you know, we're called the Ivins. You know, that's me, Jim, brother Jack, right here. You know, that's our last name, and you know, we became this version of the band. You know, I call us Loud Alternative.
Yeah.
Basically, because, you know, alternative used to mean something when we were coming up, and it means something totally different now.
Sure.
But, you know, we've always found ourselves in kind of this weird stylistic middle ground where we're not alternative, but we're not, you know, active rock, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not pop, but we're not, you know, all this shit. And so I'm just like, I call us Loud Alternative.
Okay.
And, you know, it's
on XM, we don't fit on Octane because we're not quite heavy enough, and we don't fit on Alt Nation because we're not the now version of Alt.
Correct.
Right.
So we're Loud Alternative.
So there's so many splinters of genres now, it's kind of hard to keep track of what's what anymore.
You know, we kind of became this version. You know, we're from Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
Kind of getting in our background.
I've been through there a bunch.
Yeah, right on. You know, we definitely get into that. Our home base became New York City.
Okay.
Back in 2012, I moved up there after I graduated from college.
Okay.
And, you know, basically the idea was, you know, we'd been playing together since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
We were called the Jim Ivins Band.
Okay.
Basically, just because it started out as like a nothing thing that we didn't think was going anywhere, and then it actually started to go somewhere.
Okay.
And then after a while, it was like, well, I hate having to tell people when, you know, you meet somebody, like, you meet somebody at a party, it's like, oh, what's the name of your band? Like, oh, Jim, like, nice to meet you. What's the name of your band? And I'm like, the Jim Ivins Band. They're like, douche.
Yeah.
And so, like,
it was a running joke with my friends. They only called it the Jack Ivins Band.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's weird, you know, there's two Ivins brothers playing in a band that's named after one of them. You know, it's weird.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, I had my high school band that, you know, I wanted to go the distance, and we got to college, and it was just so obvious that was so not going to happen. And I made a, you know, solo record that I thought I was just going to put out and never do anything with. And my high school band was supposed to play a show, and then we had to drop, a couple of the guys had to drop out, so somebody was like, well, why don't you play some songs off that solo? I was like, oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And so I got, you know, a couple of friends of mine, and then I got Jack, and, you know, Jack and I had never really played music together.
Oh, so you
together.
Guys hadn't always played together. I was going to ask, is it just the two of you and your family? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, okay. So our dad is a musician, and he played in bands his whole life, and then I kind of learned how to play live. It helps a lot, especially in this town, being able to do stuff on the fly, you know, like downtown or whatever.
It's all about that, yeah.
When I was like, I started playing drums when I was 13, and when I was like almost 14, uh-huh. my dad started, he had like a praise band.
Okay.
And so it'd be like Saturday afternoon, he'd be like, hey, I need you to learn 13 songs by tomorrow. And like, I don't read music or do notation.
Sure. Neither of us do.
And okay. also, like, I was like, I played drums for like 9 months.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. And so I would just be freaking out, and if I didn't do it well...
That's perfect preparation for Nashville,
terrible
dude.
Looks you get. You're like, oh!
Yeah, but yeah.
By the time I was, like, 15, like, it was, you know, no big deal. Right. I was like, all right, do this, you know.
Yeah.
Give me an hour, you know. And so that definitely was big, but our...
And honestly, our paths would cross doing that, like, Jack and I. Like, our, you know, I would end up subbing in... As like, I'm a guitar player predominantly, but I taught myself how to play bass, like having to play guitar, and so I'd end up like playing bass in Dad's praise band as well, and like we ended up going to China with our dad one time.
Oh, really?
Like, we played this huge conference in Hong Kong for like 2,000 people or something like that.
Wow.
So like stuff like that was kind of the first little thing that you know we would do musically together, but I Jack talking about our background,
and then our cousin's name is Bill Leverty, and he started a band called Firehouse.
Oh, like the Firehouse,
like the Firehouse.
Oh, wow.
So we like our first concert. I was 5, and Jim was 3, and my parents took us to see Firehouse, Trickster, and Warrant
when Warrant Blood, Sweat, the Blood, and Beers Sweat, and
Beers Tour when Warrant came out with Cherry
Pie. Of course, 1992, baby.
92, and like,
wow.
Like, I remember it, and ruined my life, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, we both are kind of on the fence about whether that ruined or like made our lives awesome. At this point, because like, I also, like, it's weird, I kind of do remember the show a little bit.
Right.
But I mean, what I definitely remember is Bill, you know, was like on MTV, and you know, they won an American Music Award, and they're going all over the world. And Bill would like, he would still like come home for Christmas, like every year. He'd fly and be like,
we'd do a big Christmas Eve where a whole family get together, and it's like, we're from Virginia, it's like Southern, so like,
yeah, I get it. Yeah,
like everybody is like dressed nice,
right?
Yeah. And like, not that he wasn't dressed, like, but like Bill would like, he was like a rock star, so he'd come in and like leather pants, and he's got this like huge hair. And we're like, this guy's a god!
Show ready at Christmas?
Yeah.
I'm wearing like... He's like, oh yeah, we were headlining Japan last night.
Yeah, I just flew in from Tokyo.
Little kids just sitting there just like staring at him. We're just following him around like all over the house because we just like cannot believe that this guy is our cousin.
Yeah.
And so, and then we just became like the biggest Firehouse. And to this day, I still think he's the coolest guy on earth. And like, and Firehouse.
So I'm playing Atlanta last week. They're freaking great.
Yeah. You know, I still think Firehouse are incredible. And that just like planted the seed. I was just like, I want to be that guy.
Right.
They sold 8 million records. You know, I'm just like, I'd love to sell 8 million records. Sounds great.
That'll shape your, especially being a young kid, seeing that. That'll shape, because then it's like, that becomes a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Like if he can do it. We can do it.
It really is. Yeah. And, I mean, my first 3 or 4 concerts were Firehouse because, you know, I saw, you know, Blood, Sweat, and Beers in 92. You know, I saw them again in, you know, 99, again in 2000, again in 2001. And then I started seeing other people's shows.
Right.
And that's when it was just like, oh, shit, like, music is awesome.
Right. Did it just not occur to you guys to start something together, or did you just not want to play together? Or
I was like a shitty older brother. I was mean. I was that mean older brother.
You were like, fuck you, I don't want to play with you.
Yeah, it was like,
I had my high school band,
you know.
Pandora's Box?
Pandora's Box. Oh, yeah. Man.
We both have had some pretty comically named bands in our upbringing.
Yeah, so I had that, and I wouldn't really let Jim ever... play. And the one time he did, like, it was not, there were a lot of sound issues.
But that was also not even Pandora's Box. That was...
No, that was my other band, Duke Bojangles and the Mastodons. Yeah, man.
Well, like, there's Mastodon now. So
yeah, I'm still got a lawsuit pending with them.
How's that working out?
Not well.
Not well. No. So, give me a sense of, like, so you did a solo...
We're going off on a lot of tangents.
No, that's totally... That's the podcast format.
Yeah.
That's totally cool. Tangent away.
Oh,
that's great. So you did a solo thing, mm-hmm. and you were basically yes. kind of like not...
Yeah, I mean,
we had not seriously played together at that
we
point.
We hadn't seriously played together. Yeah. Okay. So he starts doing a solo thing, and then it turns into a full band thing, and it was like this rotating cast of people, because mm-hmm. we just couldn't keep... We were all in college, right? And
did you go to school in Richmond, or
so
was this...
Jim graduated from VCU in okay. Richmond, and I graduated from James Madison University,
oh, yeah. okay,
in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Yep, yep.
And nice. So we were in school, and Jim's 2 years younger than I am, and I think there were like maybe like 19 people that played in that band. It's a 4-piece.
Honestly, so I think it's somewhere in like the 30s, like, because there were people that would come in for just like one show,
right?
Like yeah, yeah. you know, because we had like a core group, like me, Jack, and two other guys. Mm-hmm. But it would be like 9 times out of 10, we'd get 3 of us, and so we'd have yeah. to like replace one guy.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And that would switch from time to time. And so there were so many different people, but like you know, we had this core group of people, but then we what really started to kick it off, and where we were like, oh, like we might be able to actually like we might actually like have something here. This is like 2008. So I came up in kind of like the punk rock scene yep. in you know, Virginia. You know, Richmond, for those who don't know, it was always well known for having like a really legendary like punk and hardcore and yeah. metal scene. You yeah. know, kind of branched off of DC in the 80s yep. and then the 90s. Yep. You know, bands like Avail and Gwar, Municipal Waste, you know, all these
Lamb of God,
yeah, you know, okay. all these yeah, bands yeah. started to like kind of get like national attention. And so just like this punk ethos was always like very ingrained in the Richmond music scene. So mm-hmm. I started playing punk rock clubs when I was like 15. And you know, so I came up in the Warped Tour and all that stuff, and there yeah, was a yeah. band that I idolized called the Early November. Okay. They're from Jersey, and you know, they were one of like the big like Warped Tour bands.
Yeah.
And back in the MySpace days, yep. you know, so yeah. this is 2008.
I remember.
I saw a posting from their lead singer, who to this day I still just idolize probably more than almost anybody. And he was like, hey, I just opened a studio and I'm looking for bands to record. And I saw this and was like, oh my God, like you gotta be kidding me. Like I could go and meet Ace Enders and record with him? Like, right. no way. Like, so I messaged him on MySpace and I was like, yeah. dude, like I'm in a band in Virginia. Like, I love you. Like, let's record. And sure enough, we drove up to Hamilton, New Jersey, the uh-huh. blueberry capital of the world. Apparently, according to their town sign. And we recorded these two songs with Ace Enders.
Okay.
And so what I used to do, you know, once these songs got finished, and these songs were actually really good, and he actually like sang on them too, like it was so weird that I was like duetting with this guy that like I grew up loving, and the Warped Tour and everything. And so what I started doing was, you know, I was in college, I'd go to class and I'd come home and I would just go through the Early November's and Ace Enders solo MySpace friends list, and I would message every single person, be like, yeah. hey, I'm in a band in Virginia and we just did these two songs with Ace, listen to us. And all of a sudden we started like getting some like heat on MySpace and everything.
That's how you did it back in the day, right?
And that's yeah. how you did it, and it started to work. And yeah. I was like, oh,
God,
shit, like,
people 10 years ago.
People
Jeez.
Like this stuff. I mean, like, we get weird messages. Like, there was a girl in Ohio who was in college uh-huh. and she had a college class ask her write about someone you admire, and she wrote about me.
Wow.
Because she liked our song. Yeah. And I was just like, I gotta believe there's somebody better for you to write about. But like yeah. and you know, we had people like saying, you know, oh my God, like, you know, my dad's in the hospital and your songs are like helping me get through it. And I was like, oh shit, like, cool. we actually yeah. get, like, be a good band. Like, and so, but the problem was, I was like, we're called the fucking Jim Ivins Band. Like, this is stupid. Like, you know, this can't work.
Yeah.
And so that's why, you know, we made it through college in Virginia, and I was like, okay, I'm going to move us to New York, mm-hmm. and we're going to try and make something happen. I'd right. always dreamed about living in New York.
Yeah.
And I was like, I hadn't quite realized that, you know, everything that happened to the Strokes and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and everything back in the early 2000s, like, yeah. that was over. Like, you know, I didn't realize that I didn't realize that at the yeah. time, but...
You know a band called Long Wave out of New York City?
I know the name. I don't know the
Friends
music.
With the Strokes.
I think that's probably why I know
the name.
One
of my best buddies is the guy in that band.
Oh, that's
Steve
so funny.
Steve Shields from Long Wave. Yeah,
really?
Yeah,
okay.
I was just going to wonder to, like... God, who else do I know from New York? There was a band called Scout. Familiar with Scout? Female
Scout.
Lead singer.
Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
But anyway, I mean, this is 2012
yeah, right.
at this point.
No,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
But I was still under the impression that, like, oh, you know, we go to New York and, you know, let's make this happen. And so what's funny was...
You kind of caught the tail end of it, probably.
Yeah.
Those things were kind of tapering
off. So I moved to New York, and still doing this rotating, you know, cast of musicians or whatever, I still tried to keep my Virginia band while I was doing that, including Jack. And I was like, well, you know, this sucks, but I guess I'm going to have to get a new drummer. And Jack's like, no, you're not getting a new drummer. Like, I'm going to fucking take the bus up to New York every time we're doing a show. And he did it.
Yeah, so I, like, was playing in bands in D.C. and Virginia and
Baltimore. He was living in D.C. at the time that I moved to New York.
Okay. So well, that's not that bad of a commute. But 4 or 5 hours.
You just get on Megabus. And Megabus is like 4 hours.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
And you'd go up. It's like $20. And I'd go up to New York and I'd... Usually my routine was like I'd get off at the bus station and go to one of two places. Jim lived in the Lower East Side.
Okay.
And I'd either go to this place on like 9th and Avenue C called the Whalen or this place.
I know, I played the Whalen.
Do you play
the Whalen's amazing. It's
a great little, said great this little guy bar, that owned it named Eddie, and I don't know if he's still there or not, but he was one of the owners. And he knew me. I would just go in there and be like, Virginia, you're back in? I'm like, yeah, man. We just sit there and eat pork sandwiches and drink whiskey for 6 hours.
That's a great, great little bar. I played there a couple years ago.
There's a punk rock bar close to that. There was a New York punk band called the Dictators.
Mm-hmm.
That was their hey was the 70s. The guy's name was Dick Manitoba, who was a front guy. And there's a bar on
that's a name for you.
Handsome Dick Manitoba. Handsome Dick Manitoba.
Name if I have ever heard.
Handsome Dick Manitoba. And there's a punk bar on Avenue. It's like 6th and B. It's between 6th and 7th on B called Manitoba. Yeah. So it was like
one of the first bars I ever went to in New York.
You
before
could probably
I even lived there.
Find me in one of those two places.
Yeah, right on. Like, okay. Yeah.
So yeah, we did that for a while, and then we decided we'd change the name. So, and around the time we did that, we recorded. Was it just?
Because we changed the name when we got with Marty.
Right. So we got, when we were in New York, we were getting reviews by some, you know, I feel like, I don't know if music blogs are as big as they used to be, but I feel like...
They were still kind of big in like the early 2010s.
I feel like Instagram has kind of replaced a lot of that, but there was a couple really prominent ones that did some features on us and some print stuff that did some features on us. And there was one in particular that right after we got it, this feature, it was like... Somebody from like CeeLo's camp or something contact. Yeah. There was a couple of weird. There was like some weird stuff that was very like just like testing the waters, non-committal. Yeah. And then there was this guy that hit us up from Mississippi who was like, "Hey, my name's Marty and I rep." He was 21 Pilots lawyer. Mm-hmm. He was like, "I'd like to rep you guys," and he was really nice. He was kind of acting as a manager slash. Lawyer.
His party line was like, "I want to be the quarterback, you know, for your band." And we're like, "Hell yeah, dude! Like, fucking
everybody
run with
that,
it!"
Right.
Like, because you know, we'd never dealt with anybody who was actually like in the biz before,
right?
You know, like we don't. I mean, I booked all our shows. You know, I did all our social media. You know, I mean, you know, we were doing this shit ourselves.
Or
you know?
Our fake manager.
Oh yes, that's a funny story.
What was his name?
So I'll get there. So we had a guy. His name is Pedro Ada. He's one of my close friends. He did all of our recordings back in Virginia.
Yeah.
And I used to play
for a band called Fun Size. He played for a band called Amberetta.
Okay.
Yeah, they're another big kind of punk band out of Virginia.
Band. Okay.
That had a lot of heat back in the
River City High.
And so what I used to do was funny. You know, Jack and I went to this small private school in Virginia, and it was kind of interesting that there was a band that was like a rock band, like, you know, because everyone in private school in Virginia used to just listen to jam bands.
Yeah.
So nobody really listened to like punk rock or, you know, or any offshoots of that. So like my friends were like the people who listened to punk music and anything. And so, off of that, I just used to hang out with musicians. And, you know, even when we started to become more singer songwriter, like acoustic pop,
yeah.
And we started recording with this guy, Pedro. And so what I used to do is I just used to refer him to everybody I went to high school with.
Okay.
So one of my buddies, his name is Drew Martin, and he actually is a guy who lives here in Nashville now, but like he played in the Jim Ivins band, and then I played in his band. So he Drew Martin and the Limelights. So he started recording with Pedro, and he had this song. One of the lyrics was just left of landing right, but it sounded like he said the name Landon Wright, like with W-R-I-G-H-T.
Right.
So it became a running joke between me and Pedro that we'd be like, well, if we ever wanted to like try and get someone to like really pay attention to us, like if we were trying to book something or get some press or whatever, so we made up the Wright Agency, and there was an agent named Landon Wright
amazing.
We would like message people as.
So anytime that like you try to hit up like a promoter or like a club and they wouldn't get back to you as the band, Landon Wright would send them an email and they would get immediately back to you.
Isn't that funny how that works?
It's so shitty.
It's so stupid,
but it's funny. It's,
like,
you remember a band called Cracker?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Of course.
We opened for Cracker one time because of Landed Right.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw Cracker where you're coming back through Virginia because they're actually from Virginia. And I was like, well, that'd be really cool for us to open for Cracker. Like, I fucking love
Cracker.
Yeah. And so let's hit them up. I didn't hear anything. I messaged the club as Landed Right. Five minutes.
Right back.
They were right back to me. So we opened up for Cracker.
Booked it immediately.
So
that's amazing, dude. You gotta hustle, man. You gotta figure out shit to do.
Sometimes you gotta bullshit your way in.
Yeah.
A lot of the time you gotta bullshit your way in.
Yeah, because the assumption is if you have a person doing that for you, that you must be something.
Correct. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. We did.
Right.
His name was Landon Wright.
We did. It was Landon Wright until it was our boy out of Mississippi. And then, so basically, so he had heard, so we, our song is called The Sight of Fire, and it's from the Jim Ivins Band. It's still on Spotify and Apple Music and everything.
Cool.
You can check it out. It's a fucking great song. And that got featured on this website called Kings of A&R, and this lawyer hit us up from Mississippi, and he was like, hey, I'd really like to work with you. And so we start working with him, and
so now we're called Tomorrows.
So we change our, we go through this painstaking process, because we're finally like, okay, we finally met this guy, even though we've been kind of on the up and up as this one band name, we're gonna change the band name now.
Right.
So like, now's the time, we finally do it,
and
that's when we find out, oh yeah, everything is taken.
Oh,
so
yeah, everything's taken.
It took us 3 months to land on Tomorrows, which nobody liked except us, the two of us. I still don't think it's that bad, but every person I tell it to is like, Jim, that's the worst band name I've ever heard.
Gotta tell you, I don't think
most people have that.
It was one of those where we were like, you call a copyright off, you'd be like, all right, is this taken? They're like, everything's taken. You're like, really? Well, like, infested, Band-Aid, wart.
Well, you almost can't lose. You can't lose with the last name unless it's Van Halen.
We'll get to why we changed it, but like, I'll say a brief aside. But like, the problem with our last name, no one knows how to say it. No one knows how to spell it. People don't know if it's, we've gotten Ivins, Ivans, Irvings, Ibbins, Ivins. Everyone wants to add an R or a G or everything. And so we're really hesitant about doing it, but we ended up with somebody else. We'll get to that, but they were just like, no.
Is this like the
Tomorrow's is terrible.
The O'Neaters from
O'Neaters, man. The O'Neaters.
I knew I liked you. It's exactly like that.
Great. God, one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, we ended up with this lawyer who, he to his credit, he never pushed back on anything we wanted to do. We said we wanted to change our name. We said, because the Jim Ivins Band was kind of more of like a Goo Goo Dolls, Third Eye Blind, like Matt Nathanson kind of acoustic pop rocky kind of project.
Sure.
And we had always just wanted to get more rock.
Yeah.
And especially just kind of living in New York, like I just wanted to get more sleazy with it and just like get more rock. And the two guys that ended up in our New York band, like one of them ironically actually was from Richmond and played in a competing band with me in high school. And I always just thought he was such a cool guitar player.
Yeah.
And he had like this kind of very ambient atmospheric vibe about him. I was like, well, what if we, I could take him and like put him with like the songs that I write, like that would sound cool. And so he kind of informed the sound of the band. I was like, well, we can't be the Jim Ivins Band sounding like this. We got to change the name and we do it. And this guy was, we told him like, we're about to start recording a new record.
Yeah.
Like, would you like to hear some stuff? And he had kind of had some kind of long term plans for how he would like to build us up. And we recorded these four songs up in Brooklyn and he heard the songs and he was like, all right, fuck all of my plans.
Right.
Like, these songs are incredible.
Like, let's get you guys a deal right now.
Right now.
Like, that sounds great.
Show
me the paperwork.
Yeah, show me the paperwork. We're like, I'm ready to sign. Let's just do it. And he was like, write down every label you've ever wanted to sign to, and I guarantee you, not all of them can say no. Like, you can't go. And so we wrote down 22 labels. He's like, can't go over 22, baby. Like, no way. What we got schooled in was kind of like the new music business, which isn't really about music. It's about, mindless Twitter numbers. What would happen, this is kind of an anecdote about what would happen. He'd talk to some label, he'd show them some music, and they'd be like, oh my God, like, this is incredible. Like, let's talk again in 2 weeks. Like, let's talk next steps. He'd call us and be like, guys,
of course.
We're in. Yeah. We're so in.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk again in 2 weeks, and we're going to go to the next level.
Yeah.
So he talked to them again in 2 weeks, and he'd be like, all right, moving forward on that Tomorrow's deal, right? And they'd be like, oh, there's no way we can actually sign this band. He's like, what are you talking about? You said you really like the music. He's like, they don't have enough Twitter followers. What the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the problem that we started running into. And that kind of ran its course, and then finally, our dad was kind of just lamenting about this stuff to a friend of his who is actually like an old school music industry guy. Okay. Like he's a record producer. He did stuff for King's X and ZZ Top back in the day. He has an MTV Moon Man for directing the Sharp Dressed Man video.
Who, what's his name?
His name is Sam Taylor.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. Third Day.
Yeah, Third Day. Oh, right. Third Day was the other. And then Los Lonely Boys.
That's what he did. That's right.
He's out of Texas. He's out of DFW. But like he just happened to like grow up with our dad. Cool. And our dad was just, you know, talking to him about this. And he was like, you know, I actually know this guy. Maybe he can have some advice for, you know, the boys. Mm-hmm. And so he talks to this guy. And then he's like, hey, can you send me those songs? So we sent him the songs, and he gets back to us, and he's like, so he actually liked the songs. I was like, oh, that's very nice. And he was like, no, he really liked the songs.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, cool. He's like, we'd like to, like, meet you guys. So, like, why doesn't everybody, like, come to New York, and we'll go to a steakhouse and, like, talk to this guy? And then we found out his name, and he's actually the guy who signed Firehouse.
Oh.
To Epic back in 1989.
That's complete coincidence.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with our cousin. It was just...
Wow, that's crazy.
And, yeah, and he'd been senior VP A&R at Sony, and he'd ran A&R for Columbia, and he ran A&R for someone else or something. Yeah, yeah. So he had some clout. Definitely.
And we were like, this guy wants to talk to us?
Right,
like,
right.
And he was like, I love it. Let's make this happen.
First words out of his mouth was, I fucking hate your name. You have to change it. And that's why we became the Ivans.
Okay.
And
that was the first thing. We didn't even sit down. I don't think. He was just like, I fucking hate your name. I'm like, I like this guy.
Yeah, I was like, Well, because it was funny. I'll let Jack finish what he was going to say. But right before we had this dinner, I actually called our cousin. I was like, hey, how is this guy? Like, you know, what is he like? He's like,
right.
First of all, he's everything he says he is. Second of all, he has no filter, so you're probably going to get offended initially,
that's great.
Like,
that's exactly what you want, though.
Have a thick skin. Yeah. He's going to say everything on his mind,
right.
So he's not going to bullshit you at all. Like, he'll tell you if something sucks. And so, like I said, first words out of his mouth, we meet him in the lobby of this restaurant, we get to the table, we say, hi, nice to meet you. He breaks out this giant stack of papers. He's like, all right, guys, I took a bunch of notes on what I want you to do. Here's what's going to happen. First things first, I fucking hate your name. And that's where the conversation went.
And there was a similar kind of thing. Like, he was like, all right, hold on, I got to get you guys, the four of you guys, in a room. We'll go run a rehearsal space. I got to see you play.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right now. And, like, we played one song, and he was like, oh, that'll be it. We're fine, guys.
No, we played three.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And But he tells our other two guys to go. And, like, he was like, was that a fucking six-string bass I just saw? I'm like, yeah. He's like, what the fuck is that? That guy's a fucking hobbyist. Get him out of here. I'm like, oh, God, Jesus.
Well, it was even funnier because our bass player at the time, who I love, he was a great bass player. Like, he had never played that bass before. Just for whatever reason, he broke it out for that day. He was like, dude, I think this will be great.
And he was like, I hate this guy. Get him out of here right now.
And I was like, no.
Bad choice. Wow. That's our boy. We're not leaving him. He's like, fine, fuck it.
Yeah.
Don't ever let me see that bass again.
That's funny.
We're with him for a while, and it's kind of it's the same
kind of deal.
Where it's just like, oh, you know, there were a couple of times where it was like, well, a lot of the problem was the same kind of thing. It was like, you guys don't really fit in the box. You're not packaged very neatly for this. No.
People want stuff that's easy. Yeah, people want...
No, of course. They want to fit you into what
they want you to either sound like 3 Days Grace or sound like Panic at the Disco.
In fact, there was a point where he was like, all right, I think we want to put you on tour with Chevelle. And I was like, dude, we will get dusted every night. I don't want to go on tour with Chevelle. Like, we don't... He's like, well, that's like...
Yeah.
You know, that's active rock.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, yeah, but we're not... quite that. Or like a little less than that. You're like, well, fuck. You know, and so I was like, I don't want to... You never want to be the softest band I'd rather be the hardest band on a soft bill than the softest band on a hard bill.
Because they'll murder you.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, you're the hard band on a soft bill, there's probably going to be some people in there that are like, yeah, I'm not all soft. Like, you know, I think I can dig this.
Right,
you know?
But if you're the soft
band on a hard bill, it's like, pussies.
So some of the strategy was like, all right, I got this other guy I'm working with that's a straight pop act. So I'm going to try and package you guys to a record company. It's like, this one's the safe bet because it sounds just like all this other shit that's on the... one's a wild card.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And Michael he'd done a lot of his career was doing outside. Like, he had actually Los Lonely Boys too, and it was like, when they came out, it was like so different than everything else.
Yeah, nobody thought that was going to work. Completely different.
No, right. Yeah, yeah.
And he had multiple.
That's why it worked. Yeah, exactly. And so we were like, hey, we can do that.
Right. He'd signed Keb Moe, which at the time, the label that was on had nothing like that, I think. And there were a couple other artists, but he was always just like getting people that were kind of outside the mainstream.
Right.
And he was like, you're going to be my that, but I need the pop thing to go with it to make the deal go through.
Right on.
And it would just never quite materialize. And he was like, all right, I think we need a co-manager. So he goes, and there were a couple different guys that names were thrown around, and we were excited about all of them. And we land on a guy who had, he at the time, was he still managing Lamb of God?
Or was he was, but the thing was we liked, because not only that, but like the thing we liked about him was that, so he managed Lamb of God, who are like, you know, the pride of Virginia, you know, and they're from Richmond, you know, where we're from. But like, not only that,
he broke Breaking Benjamin. They were his band.
Okay.
And then he got them.
But the thing, at least I can speak for me personally, the thing that attracted me to him was that he knew Richmond, because not only did he rep Lamb of God, he rep this band called Conditions.
Okay.
You've probably, no, most people who will hear this have never heard of, but they're an unbelievable band from Richmond. Unfortunately, they're not together anymore, but like, he repped them, and so like a place that we used to play all the time is called the Canal Club, Virginia. And he knew what the Canal Club was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he knew all of these things about our hometown, and I was like, okay, he had no idea that we would be from Richmond.
Right.
But he repped Lamb of God and he repped Conditions, and like, this seems just like the right guy. Like, he knows who we are. He knows where we came from.
Okay.
And so like, that seemed really, again, kind of like the first guy managing us, this seemed serendipitous that like, oh, this is a guy who understands Richmond, Virginia. Like, this is cool that, like, he would be our guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so what was funny was we weren't entirely, a lot of these meetings, you know, if you're, like, a manager and they say they're doing something, sometimes you don't really know if they're doing that.
It's actually happening.
Especially if it's, like, high-level shit in the business. It's like, I can't call, you know, whoever to see if, did they really take that meeting. But I still play with this band out of D.C. called Burn the Ballroom, and we were, the 4 days before we met this guy, we were playing a show in D.C. opening for a band called Dance Gavin Dance. That's like a, I don't even know what the hell to call that band. Like, their genre.
You don't call them metalcore. Like, that's too hard for
but
that. Screamo,
they're maybe. Warped Tour-ish, but on the heavy side.
Yeah.
They're popular with the kids, but like 21-year-old stepbrother loves him. But this guy had contacted us, who was a manager out of Chicago, and he drove down because he was at the time he was managing Cedar.
Okay.
And he drove down because he wanted to see us play, and we're in the parking lot, and he goes, man, I know you. And I'm like, we just met 10 minutes ago, man. Pretty good. I know you too, I think. He's like, no, you play in a band with your brother. And you're repped by this guy. And I'm like, what? How the hell do you know? He's like, because he called me 2 weeks ago and I was like, and asked if I wanted to co-manage. I'm like, oh, shit. I guess he's really been taking all these meetings.
Yeah, right. So that's good. That's good.
That's pretty insane. Yeah, it's a small freaking world.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So we get this other guy, and he's like, come to Washington. We'll meet in D.C. And he shows up, and he's like, guys, I got 3 offers. They're not on paper yet.
But I think one of them.
I got them.
But this one at least, like, I'm pretty sure, like, they're gonna present me with a hard offer this coming week.
Right.
It was a Saturday.
It was a Saturday on Memorial Day weekend. So we're like,
Tuesday, hard offer's coming. I'm your guy. And then just, you know,
like everything else in this story, didn't happen.
Well, right. So what year was this? And did you guys come to Nashville with?
We came to Nashville in 2017.
Well,
Jim moved in 2016.
I moved in late 20s. Oh. Hello.
And here's our
guitar player, Hatton.
What's up, man?
Hey.
Welcome to the impromptu podcast.
Yes.
Thanks for being here, man. Welcome.
Buddy. Yeah, man.
What's your name again?
Michael.
Yeah. So this is Hatton, our guitar player. We also grew up with him in Virginia, so that's just another layer to this story.
Where are we at in the story?
We haven't gotten here yet.
So, a lot of this kind of stuff.
This is 2015
that
this is happening. And so,
if you guys don't mind, I love you.
Okay.
Go for
it. For God's sake,
go
be careful.
Yeah.
Yes, you're your mouth when you talk to me.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, so, go.
So this is all going down in 2015.
Okay.
And then we, at this point, we had left New York, yeah, and we come back to Virginia because the first manager had been like, well, New York is not happening anymore, and it'll look way more unique if you come out of Virginia, mm-hmm, because when you start to think about it, you're like, well, who has really made it out of Virginia? And you think about a lot of bands, but they're not like, they're what I call them, I call them like always the bridesmaid, never the bride. They're, yeah, like, they're bands that like a group of people definitely know. You're like, oh yeah, I think I heard about them like one time, or, sure, or even, you know, like there are bands like, you know, like Cracker and Seven Mary Three,
yep, yeah, yeah,
and Parachute and May, yep, and I mean even, you know, a band like Avail or, you know, whatever. I mean,
Mraz is from
Mraz didn't break until he moved to California.
Yeah, right. What's his D'Angelo's from Richmond.
D'Angelo's from Richmond, okay, but you don't think, oh, he's a Richmond guy. You, yeah, just think he's, no, D'Angelo. You, yeah, know what, right, I mean? So there's a couple. Really, everyone's like, oh, isn't Dave Matthews from Virginia?
Yeah, yeah, Richmond.
And that's kind of like the big one.
Yeah, right.
And so he's like, well, it'll look way more unique if you break out of Virginia. I'm like, okay, you know, there's some validity to that, sure. And so, you know, we stuck it out in Virginia again for about another year. And again, you know, a couple things, you know, looked like they were going to happen. Yeah. They didn't. And then we never actually had, like, a goodbye conversation with this guy. It just kind of naturally happened. We were just, yeah, all just like,
the last thing was, you know? We were tired. The last thing was, I've got to deal with this one label, which was a, I like them, and then
like he had an imprint under this label, and he was like, "Well, I think I can get the parent company to sign you."
Okay,
yeah. And he was like, "All right, it's going down." And then that guy, that VP of A&R, got canned.
Of course, like they all did.
Or he might have retired or something. Like
I think it was a downsizing.
Cause either way, he left the company.
And like, they moved that label moved from, they closed their New York office and everything went just only LA.
Sure.
And we were just like, that's it.
Yeah, like, we used to have a running joke with the band I was in when I was growing up, because the people would die, literally. Like, anybody that showed an interest in the band,
we had one of those.
A string of two or three people happen. Died.
Yeah.
And
we,
we had that happen, actually. Okay. Yeah, there was the guy, Sam, who grew up with our dad, you know, mm-hmm, the ZZ Top record producer.
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
So he had one other guy that he knew in the business. He was an old school, sure, concert promoter.
Yeah. This dude managed ZZ Top, and he owned...
No, there was another really big one. It wasn't the Eagles. It was, he'd been an agent for, like...
No, it wasn't. It was that he had a publishing company that one time owned, like, 30% of the country songs or so. It was something insane.
Some really crazy number. And I think he had also, like, on the live side, like, broken Maroon 5. That was, like, the latest thing he'd done.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was, you know, he'd been in the business a long, long time. He was like, you know what? I want one last great band. Like, find me that band. And so Sam hit him up. He was like, I have it. Like, it's the Ivans. Like, yeah, you got to go with these guys.
Yeah.
So this is that. It's still in 2016 now.
Okay.
And so the second manager who managed Breaking Benjamin, whatever, he quit after he shopped us to everybody and everyone said no. And he was like,
right, it was all majors. He's like,
I've never had this happen in my life.
So I've never had this happen, and I can only do this if you have a major, because otherwise it's just not my work. Indy won't have the resources to do what I want to do, so
sure,
there's no point in me being here. And we're like,
so at this point, shit, you know, things are kind of things are gone with him. Things are kind of running the course with the first guy, and so Sam comes back and he's like, I got this guy.
Right.
He's looking for one last ride. Like, let's do it. So he pitches us to him, and it feels a little funny, because what we find is that he himself doesn't quote get us, but he's like, but I'm pretty sure like the younger people in my office will get you, and they'll know how to like get you to other people. And so finally we're like, all right, you know what, everything else has fallen through, who are we to say, so what if he doesn't get us, like, you know, if he's still willing to take a chance on us, let's do it. Drops dead.
Oh yeah. That's not uncommon.
And you know, it was hard not to be selfish about it, and why does this have to happen to us?
Yeah,
and you're like, oh no, this is like a person.
A man's dead.
A man is dead.
You know, he was old. He
was in his 80s, I think.
He's a poor bastard.
Yeah. But so at that point, we were like, okay, we need a hard reset here, that was the first, I don't know if I could do this anymore moment, but then Jack here, he'd been trying to get me to move to Nashville for probably 2 years at that point.
Okay. So you moved to Nashville ahead of him?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, you were just trying to get him to move to Nashville.
Yeah, he just thought it was a good idea.
I just was like, dude, like, I've been here on tour before
with
other band, and and was like, it seems like there's just musicians everywhere. I feel like this is just, I've obviously, now I know this, but like, I was like, you know, in New York, it's a cool town. There's some cool musicians there, but that is not a music-centric place.
No.
It's an everything-centric place.
Yeah, right,
Or a nothing-centric, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess like, Nashville is just, it's just about music.
Yeah.
Unless you're an Instagram influencer, then, you know, it's about all kinds of other shit.
What is that even?
I don't know, but I hate it.
We're old guys about that. But I just didn't know anything about this city. We had been here for a wedding one time, like 2 years. It's 2016. We'd been here for a wedding 2 years prior. I was here for 36 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I drunkenly walked through the McDonald's drive-thru line at Vanderbilt. I mean, that's like all I knew about Nashville.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so I wasn't saying no, like, oh, that sounds stupid. I had been hesitant because I was like, I just don't know anything about it.
Right.
And so I had a job offer to move back to New York, and it was pretty much going to be like, you got to give up music.
Yeah, right.
Because I was going to work for like a really high profile like marketing agency.
And okay.
I was going to run social media for Mountain Dew.
Oh, wow.
Which was really weird.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, a little bit. And I was like, so I already know because I have friends in this company. I was like, I'm never going to be able to do music again if I do this.
Yeah,
and I've been weighing the pros and cons, and like, they weren't going to pay me very well. And I was like, I already did that. I struggled in New York for years, and like, I don't know if I want to do that anymore. I don't know if I'm ready to give up on music. And then I just started seeing Nashville pop up everywhere. It was really weird.
Yep.
I started seeing it in like, movies and TV and podcasts and articles online. Yeah. What I didn't know at the time was that Nashville was coming. Everyone was moving here.
This is the longest getting to.
Yeah, I know.
This is the longest getting to. What? Tell me about. You're going to give up music.
That's fine.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. You can edit all of this out.
No, it's all good.
So finally,
I don't do much editing.
So finally, I was just like, Nashville's popping up everywhere. And Jack asked me to move there. So then. Hatton, the man you just met for a second, he had always he'd been kind of in our orbit for a while. You know, we grew up with him. We like played a couple gigs with him after we moved back to Virginia. Yep. He'd subbed in for guitar because he was always just like an incredible guitar player growing up. And whenever we're like, every time one of these manager guys would be like, hey, your world's about to change, like you're about to go on the road, we knew that like our current guitar player would never be able to do it, but we would like call Hatton and be like, hey, if so and so happens, like, would you want to like come on the road with us? And he was always like, yeah. And so Hatton called Jack as he was getting out of grad school, and he was like, yo, we should move to Nashville together. And Jack was like, so I got some irons in the fire here in D.C. I can't do it right now, but you should call Jim and see if he wants to do it. And so Hatton called me out of the blue. We talked on the phone for like an hour, and I was like, fuck it.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I'm going to turn down this job offer. I don't have a job. I don't have an apartment. Like, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to figure it out. And so we dropped everything. We moved to Nashville in August 2016. Jack followed in January 2017.
Okay.
And that's when we kind of started the Nashville version of our band. We finally put out the album that had been gestating and shopped for like 4 years. And
so that's the one that just came out?
No, that came out in 2017.
Oh, it came out in 2017.
Okay, it came out in 2017, but it had been, we basically wrote that record.
Starting in 2013.
The first four songs were in 2014, and every time we were with lawyers, managers, all this stuff, they're like, you can't put anything out. Because, put it out, like, you know, you we're on a holding pattern, and everyone thought it would be, like, you know, a 4-6 month holding pattern or something. Right. It turned into 4 years almost. Which was brutal. We play shows, and they'd be like, dude, we want to buy your music. We're like, you can't.
Yeah.
They'd be like, well, I'll never talk to you again. And so, basically, you know, we put out the album, and, you know, we spent our first year here trying to get people to care about it, and it just didn't happen. And so,
have you done any touring outside of Nashville at this point? Not since you've been here.
Because we were just trying to establish ourselves here before we started, you know, making the concentric circles, you know, outside. And, you know, we did that first year, and it just, like, didn't connect. And that's when, you know, you saw my post, you know, where I talked about the iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's where I literally sat at a friend's dinner table, and for the first time ever, I said, I can't do this anymore.
I think, like, that's a common thread, though, dude. I think, honestly, all of us that are here. Well, I had this conversation with one of my friends the other day that, like, anybody who moved to Nashville, I think, I know where it started from. I was at Lau Jams on Monday night, this thing that we hold monthly here, and I was having a conversation with somebody, and it's a brilliant thing, and you guys have probably experienced this, where we're all a little bit out of our minds, people that do music are a little bit...
You have to be. Are you crazy? You have to be.
Well, right. And we all have a specific... sort of sense of humor that I think once you kind of let your guard down and realize that we're all like that, it's fucking amazing because you can say anything and you can kind of drop in these things in conversation. And when someone laughs really hard at something you say that you think that if you were talking to a normal person, they might, you know, institutionalize you for,
right. Yeah.
You go, oh, I get it. And that's the thing is that you have to sort of be an extra special out of your mind kind of person to have moved here, because you're committed to being out of your mind then. Like, you've actually put thought behind it, you've turned down
normal life opportunities right. and like money and careers right. and friendships, relationships, like all this stuff.
Yeah,
like
all of it.
You have to, if you want to do this, like you have to turn that stuff down. And only people who live here and do what we do
right.
and go to stuff like Loud Jams and Rare Hair and play all these shows, well, those are the only people that really get it.
Yeah, right.
So like, we're telling this story right now on this show.
Well, I mean, like, sort of. We got one of the people. I mean, not that this haunts me or anything, but
not that this haunts him.
I think it was like, I can't remember which major it was, but it was one of the, you know, fucking all of them. They were like, well, we get off the phone with the second big guy, and he's like, you're not gonna want to know what happened. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, it was between you and some kid on something called Vine. I'm like, Vine? Those are 7-second clips. Like, yeah, but he had 3 million followers, so.
Yeah, well,
like, did he even have a song? He's like, nope. Snatched him right up.
Took the Vine, yeah.
I don't think anybody knows what the fuck is happening anymore. You know, like, even the labels are kind of, like, throwing their hands up and going, I don't know. I mean, it's predominantly streaming now, and you guys know about the whole thing that's going on with Spotify and, all those companies. Like, they're raking us over the coals. Like, I actually just canceled my Spotify premium account, and I ripped all my original music off of Spotify, Google, Pandora,
because like, and ironically, Amazon. Apple is turned out to be the man of Apple the people right now. Yeah.
If you really look at the math, though, I will say this: that it's, I think Spotify's paying like 0.0005 cents. Yeah. Apple is 0.0009 cents.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's only 40% more.
They're like, hey guys, 40%,
40% of shit is still shit.
Yes,
you know. So, but beautiful thing is, like, in the given climate where we have the internet and you guys have like you have instant contact with anybody that you want. So you were, I mean, I'm assuming that since you were going to be taking a marketing position, that you probably have some idea how to do some of that stuff, right?
I try.
So yeah,
you know,
so
I mean, like all of us, we're all just throwing shit at the wall.
No,
to see
right,
if it sticks,
right.
You
but
know?
Your music is good, so yeah.
Well, thanks,
man. It would hit me that like if you just get that in front of the right audience, that it would be.
That's the math equation. Like, okay, we know that the audience is out there. We just gotta find them.
Yeah.
You know, and in the way that the internet works now with all these different platforms and different ways to consume music, there's the noise is just amplified so much more. It's just how do you cut through it?
Dude, I will say that, like, I mean, I've only been Facebook friends with you for a couple weeks now, and I've noticed that since the single came out, like, you've got a lot of people writing about it, and
you're
getting it posted in a lot of places, which is really cool. And that's, I think that's the name of the game, is just to keep doing
it. Really
it.
Is.
I mean, you're on my little podcast. Well, all three of my listeners, I'm sure, are going to love it.
Well, dude, I mean, we love you for having us on here.
Oh,
and,
dude.
You know, I'm glad you like the new song. You know, the new song.
I really do. Yeah. And it's one of those things where, again, I was telling you before the mics were on that, I mean, I'm so jaded. I've been doing this since.
Have you been listening to us talk for the last hour?
Well, no, but I think that's sort of a common thread, and what it has to come down to is you really have to love what you do. You have otherwise none of us would fucking do this if we didn't really love to do it.
Absolutely.
And even if those little things are just incremental little things, like at a show where you connect with an audience that you thought we weren't going to connect with these people, or if it's like two people in that audience, sometimes that can make your night where you got somebody like losing their
it
mind.
It happened last night.
I saw you guys play last night.
We played New Faces Night at the Basement last night, and got to shout out Michael Grimes. You know, he's such a good dude.
The great Grimey.
Yeah. He's actually been a fan of ours, like, kind of since the beginning of us in Nashville, and we're so blessed that, you know, he's around, and he's such a good guy. And he put us on New Faces again last night. It's the third time we've done it.
Yeah.
And the thing about New Faces Night, for whether you or anybody listening doesn't know, is that, you know, it's just like an iPod shuffle of, you know, artists, you know, Nashville. You could get an acoustic duo followed by a blues band followed by, you know, country, whatever.
That's a beautiful thing, though.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes when you're a band like us, you know, you might not get the right crowd.
Yeah, you're not going to connect with the people that are there to see a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe you might.
Sometimes you, know, you do.
Like, you might.
Last night, it didn't quite happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just kind of the thing. You know, that's just kind of what can happen.
Nashville's a tough nut to crack, though, too, because, I mean, you got everybody here. Well, everybody here is as jaded as us or worse.
Yeah.
You know? I saw Chris Cornell before he passed away, acoustic at the Ryman.
Oh, my God.
And it was funny because it was the only place I joked with in the world where... when the crowd started clapping along, they didn't speed up.
Oh, my God.
I always joke about that. I joke about that in Nashville a lot because I was at a show. I was at a metal show on Thursday.
Yeah.
And the bass player started doing the clap, and I was like, all right, let's see how long.
Here we go.
And it takes for this to get up to 200 BPM.
That's right.
The drummer's going to be pissed.
Yeah.
And just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The metronome the whole time. And they didn't speed up. And it's like a lot of concerts like that are like that. I'm like, and it is. It's like, this is the only city in the world that's like
this. Yeah, no, because everybody's, you know,
immediately speed up.
Cornell was rhythm. Cornell was getting standing ovations in the middle of songs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in the middle of songs.
Well, if there's one artist who deserved to get standing ovations in the middle of everything, it's that guy.
Yeah. So, do you guys have a. You have a full length record coming out, or is this the single? Just is this kind of the tip of the iceberg with everything? So
Certain is the new single. Yeah. It's available everywhere right now. We recorded with the great Matt Lay at the Tracking Room.
Awesome.
Right off of Music Row.
I'll play it at the end of this episode too.
If you like,
that'll be.
The song had a very interesting origin story, which is that back in 2016, Well, I guess I'll let you tell the origin of this audition.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone gives a shit. But
well, if they listen this far, they probably do.
Oh my God, if you're this far in.
This far, you must really like what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep this going and record me sleeping for the next 8 hours.
Why not? It's the surprise 8-hour podcast.
Yeah, man.
Surprise.
The mystery track at the end.
Thank everybody for it.
Yes. So my band in D.C., who I still play with, in 2014... You know, booking a regional tour that makes sense from a money perspective is hard enough.
Yeah, of course.
And I was just like, I want to play overseas. I want to do crazy shit and out of the country. And so we were living in D.C. Somebody, I don't even remember who it was like, you know, there's like, I think there's grants like in the government for arts. And we were like,
Yeah.
And my singer and I just started thumbing around through all these different art grants. We found this one called American Music Abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it's like this program within the State Department. They take 9 musical acts a year and they just send them to places that don't, certain of our embassies around the world qualify for this grant program.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to places that really don't ever get direct contact with arts from America.
Really?
Yeah, it exists. And they never use rock. Like, I was looking at, like, the list. It was, like, a lot of, like, Americana and a lot of, like, it seemed like Berkeley or Juilliard stuff that was, like, string ensembles.
Yeah,
And I was like, I have a straight-up rock band. I don't know. They probably will hate this, but what the hell? It's and they have multiple rounds of auditioning, and we got the grant. And so I went out for 5 weeks. We were in North Africa and in the Middle East. And,
holy shit. That's cool.
And as opposed to like a USO tour, which I'd love to do.
yeah.
Those are like you're on a military base and it's like 4 Americans generally.
Yeah, right.
Or whomever
is
stationed at that base. This was like the opposite. This was like you're staying, you know, in hotels that are normal, and then you're doing shows that are like in those cities.
Oh wow, that's
and like
cool.
Yeah, and so and then there's also like an educational component. So we'd go to like a middle school or a high school or a university or a conservatory, and just kind of and this. There were a couple conservatories. I was like, I don't belong in here. I'm sure everyone in this room can completely dust me off the stage. Like, I really don't want to like lecture about anything. Let's just do more. Every do those, I'd be like, let's just do Q&A. You've got an American musician in front of you. Like, what do you want to ask him?
Right.
Because there's like this perception that like if you're a working musician in America that like you're rich and like you're wildly successful.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
All you gotta do is just pluck a guitar.
Like, I was in Russia doing. So basically, this program involved. We were in the Middle East, and then after that, we got a phone call from the U.S. consulate in Vladivostok, which is on the Pacific coast of Russia. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to bring us out to do a festival, and then that turned into a month-long programming there. And then I actually got asked to go back by myself because I played football in college and coached a little after. And the U.S. had a program where they were trying to help these club football groups that had started in Siberia and in the far east of Russia, because they were learning, they're trying to learn how to play football, but it's like they didn't learn, grow up doing it.
Yeah.
So they're like trying to learn off like YouTube videos and stuff.
Yeah.
And these guys are like, hey, we can bring you back for another cultural programming thing where you'll go and help these teams learn how to play football. And then at night, you'll sit in with Russian musicians and then do educational stuff and stuff too. So I'm trying to get the Ivans involved in this as well.
Sure.
And so one of the things in this audition is you have to take, they give you three to or five options that are old traditional folk song from okay. different countries around the world.
Okay.
And this one was like this Lebanese folk song that's like hundreds of, maybe it's 1,000 years old or something okay. like that. And we're like, it started off as like trying to take our spin on it, and then it okay. just evolved.
Oh, that's where the song came from.
That's where the music came from. And so we make this song, and you know, we do this audition. The audition doesn't land, but like Jack and I always just had it. We're like,
we didn't get that grant.
Yeah. We didn't get the grant, but we were like, that song was cool shit. Like, you know, we got to do something with it because the audition is a very short period of time, so we never fleshed it out fully. Like the original version of the song was probably about 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Okay.
And so we were like, when we're thinking about doing a new album, we're like, well, we got to do something with that song. We didn't really know what to do with it. And then one day I came home, and Hatton, our guitar player here, is sitting here.
Yeah.
I heard him just practicing in his room, and he was playing this very Eastern sounding riff that happened to be at the exact same tempo as this song that Jack and I had lying around that he had never heard before.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And so I bust into his room. I'm like, what is that? And he's like, oh, it's just this riff I have. I was like, okay, I have a song that's going to go in, so deal with that. He's like, great. So, like, that became the chorus of Certain musically, and then that became kind of like the outro. And then I was like, dude, well, let's do some big solo at the end, too. So Hatton here is a master's in classical performance, so he's a classically trained guitar player. So he has all of these, like, classical inspirations that he can apply to just like doing like a shredding guitar solo.
Yeah.
And so the last minute of this song is just him playing a guitar solo. And so that all came from this day that I just happened to come home and hear him playing this thing. And I was like, well, you gotta add this. And so we realized like, well, we got something cool here.
Right.
And then our bass player Reagan, you know, he put this funky flea bass line, you know, underneath the song. And so we're really excited about it. It just came out. And I think it's melodic. It's cool. It's like I really
dug the melodic structure of things.
Thank
and
you.
That's for me. That's Thanks, like man. That's everything for when I listen to something. It's got to have melody, you know. Mm-hmm. And that actually that hit me right away. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. Like the vocal melodies, the guitar melodies, everything's really, really solid on it.
Thank you very much.
So is this like have you recorded other songs that are going to be coming out?
Yeah, so we actually yesterday we finished was the last day of tracking.
Oh, you did? Okay.
For a full length.
When's the rest of the record going to be done and coming out and stuff?
So we still
got to mix it.
Get mixed and mastered, and we're probably going to do at least one other single, one other video beforehand. So, you know, you got to do a prep and roll out. And, you know,
I thought the video was cool, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man.
You
know, you guys definitely have a thing. And it's like I said, I think it's just a matter of, like, finding the audience to plug that into and how you do that is beyond me. I think if everybody knew how to do that, we'd all be doing it.
Exactly. You know? I mean the way that we're doing it is we're just, you know, we're getting out and meeting as many people in this town as
that's
we can.
The way to
so we're
do
doing
it,
the shows like Rare Hair you know, we've done Metal Fest and a couple of these tribute shows. We did a Nirvana tribute, we did a Tool tribute, we started Grunge Night.
Yep.
So we started doing that, and you know, using the Young Entertainment Professionals, you know, Facebook group to fill those shows in, and then we meet people from there. And you know, then, you know, doing Soul Vibes. You know, Jack did his first Soul Vibes a couple of weeks ago, and there's all these different.
That's absolutely the way to do it, man. Because I mean, when you hear that it's all about who you know. That's very true for Nashville as well. It's all the same shit, no matter.
Everybody
who you know
with a big gig. It's like, how'd you get this? I knew a guy.
Yeah,
I knew a guy. And you know, the sense of community that is present in this sound is like nothing ever experienced. Like, you know, New York and even Richmond was just like, it just never felt acceptance in any way. And then, like, the moment, you know, once we really started hitting, you know, we had a hard first year, as I talked about, but then once we started playing these other shows that were all about just, like, the communal aspect, and that didn't happen until 2018, you know, we started doing these types of shows. Once we started doing that and started meeting these people and making these connections, we're like, oh, my God, like, it's such a familial vibe here, and that's, like, so cool that, like, a city that's, like, as known for, like, being so huge, like, for music as Nashville, like, has this very small town vibe. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, the music community, for how important Nashville is, the music community is so small.
It's great. It's, I mean, I'll throw that out there again, that everybody who's here, to like, took a giant leap. Most people here took a giant leap to move here to do this. Everybody slept on someone's couch or, or had somebody, you know, give them a place to stay or got them a job or whatever like that. And so I think that, it, you know, and I have people, I have friends from out of town who have kind of like tried to come and visit to work for like a week at a time and then leave. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that here. You kind of, it's once you do move here and once everybody knows that you moved here, it's, You're in the club because, you know, you're one of us kind of thing. And it's not that we don't take kindly to outsiders. It's just that if you're not going to take that leap of faith, I'm not going to put my faith in what you're doing because you don't believe in it enough to move here kind of thing. You know, and maybe that's maybe that might sound exclusive. People listening might be getting pissed off right now, but fuck them. It's my show.
There you go.
Well, I mean, it's just a small example of that. Me personally, I'm always trying to get better at what I do with guitar. I just, that's been my fascination with, you know, why I got my degrees in classical guitar, and I always want to learn how to do something better. I took a semester of jazz when I was in South Carolina for undergrad, and I was lucky enough to, through a connection of mine, I was able to get a guitar lesson with Johnny Hyland, one of the best chicken pickers.
I know Johnny,
He's a great guy and a hell of a guitar player, and it was awesome. And I took a 4-hour lesson with him and just, you know, like, just, he showed me all these things. I was talking to him, talking about the music scene around here. And one of the things that really stuck with me that I noticed was how, you know, when he was gigging on Broadway, because let's face it, everybody who's big now has gigged on Broadway at some
point.
Yeah,
pretty much, yeah.
And he was just like, oh, man, like, you know, this example he gave me was like, man, I have a compressor pedal. Like, oh, man, it's crapped out on me. Like, hey, you know, can somebody help me out? And we would have four people be like, yo, I got a pedal you can use for tonight's gig, man.
That's,
you know,
exactly it.
Just that's that whole familial connection around here is just something we're all really grateful for. And it's just, it's so welcoming and encouraging because it's not only, you know, we really are encouraging what everybody does around here. You know, like, and that's why we're grateful for everybody that comes in and, you know, like, checks out our shows. We had three of our friends through the music community that maybe you knew about it. I didn't know that they were going to show up. It's like, oh man, they're here. Oh man, that's really, that's really awesome of them. You know?
Yeah.
Like, and every time they have a gig, I always make the effort to be like, oh, okay, put this in my calendar. Like, you know, if I'm off work or something like that, yeah, definitely check that out. Or if I can make time off work, you know, definitely check it out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. That's, I mean, and it's,
I always tell people too, I've said this again on a bajillion of these podcasts, is that, like, it helps to be nice people, and you guys are all nice guys. That will get you further than anything. That gets you further. Cause you know, if people are going to, if a bigger band is going to say, I want to take the Ivans on the road with me, you know, you better be fucking cool to hang out with. Otherwise they're not going to ask you.
The good hang factor.
Yeah. You gotta be, really good at what you do, but you also have to be
good,
really nice.
You better be chill.
Yeah, I mean, same with picking band members too. It's like, you know, you could have the best, you know, guitar player, bass player, drummer, whatever in the world. If they suck to hang out with, like, you'll choose someone who's not quite as proficient as they are, but who has, like, the vibe that you like. You're like, yeah, I can drink a beer with this guy, you know, forever.
That's totally it. Yeah, that's totally it.
I thought it was really cool how, you know, Jack and Jim, like, really made the effort to, when we found Ray, you know, they, like, and we actually took Ray out and interviewed him just over a few beers and everything, over some dinner and
whatnot.
Best
way to do it,
We just talked to him and just, I think I was the only one that actually, like, drilled him with a musical theory question because that's just how I think.
Which was not something Jack and I were going to do.
but Jack and Jim, like, they're, you know, like, during that whole process, like, their whole mindset was just, let's just feel this guy out. Like, you know, can we vibe with him? and we got the good vibe from him. And then
I think it was probably within 10 minutes of us meeting him, and yeah. Our first beer was not even through, and we're like, yeah, you're in the band.
Yeah,
like, yeah, you're fine. You're fine. You're working out just fine here.
Yeah, right.
And to Jack and Jim's credit, too, like, I remember that first rehearsal that we had with Ray. It just immediate
clicked.
Like, yeah. We clicked immediately. It was like, okay, we got something really special here.
Yeah.
Well, so as we're, I mean, I guess we're.
I'm kind of like, I kind of try to cap it at like an hour-ish, because it's easier for people to digest it at an hour. But I do this thing called Stories from the Road at the top of the show. Do you guys, either collectively or individually, have an experience or a story you can relate that's like the craziest thing that ever happened to you, or something really fucking weird, or something really funny, or any of those things?
I mean, if anyone's going to tell this to lead this conversation, it's him, Mr. Rush over here.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to tell anything that's particularly weird, just because I have a long, fruitful relationship with the State Department.
It's about to end.
Yeah, it ends right now.
That's where it ended. Honey, can you not listen to the podcast? Thank you.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of weirdest.
I mean, I think you getting that couple fighting
I don't know what you're saying.
You know exactly what I'm going to say. Okay. The people who didn't think it was you in the bar.
But that's not a good story. That's like a douche story. That's not like a funny story.
I've got one. Just real quick.
Yeah.
This was before I started jamming with Jim and Jack. I'm sure I missed this part.
Keep this PG.
Oh,
you don't have to.
Well, here's the thing. So, one of my best musical experiences was I had a friend back in Richmond that I was home for the summer from South Carolina from school, and we had this gig. I was like, it's just acoustic, man. You know, we're just doing like 7 covers. You know, they're going to give us, you know, the typical how you pay opening bands, you know, a pitcher of beer and a meal, you know, something like that. So I was like, all right, whatever. So we did this acoustic gig. I couldn't tell you what songs we played. You know, it was just, you couldn't. But there was this woman that walked up to me afterwards, and you could tell she had been crying. Like her makeup was smeared and everything. And she was just like, thank you. I was like, oh, for what? She was like, just thank you for playing this one song that you played. It's like, oh, well, you know, thank you. You know, I'm glad you enjoyed it. She's like, no, you don't understand. Like, I loved that song. It always meant the world to me. And she went on this life story how in a week, her mom had died of breast cancer, her sister had committed suicide, and her father had been diagnosed with testicular cancer all in 1 week. And she had just loved that song because of how she always connected with it all her life. And she came up to me and said, that was the best version of that song that I had ever heard. I was like, well, thank you very much. You know, like, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Like, how do you respond to something like that? You know, and that's, I mean, I could go on into, like, you know, the esoteric meaning between the dichotomy of good and evil and how it relates to music aesthetics and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, going back to what we were talking about, you know, 15 minutes ago or so, how music connects with everybody, but it also connects with the greater music community that we have, you know? And if you're passionate about what you do, if you walk on that stage and just give it your all, just, you don't hold back anything. You let your, because you're being exposed and you're letting yourself be exposed. Sure. And you got to walk up there and just give it your all no matter what you do. But that was when I learned for the first time in my life that music can truly, truly reach somebody and help somebody out.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was no greater feeling of I don't even know what the word is to describe it. I don't want to say satisfaction, because I didn't go out to try to help this person out. I didn't know who she was. I haven't seen her since. I'll probably never see her again for the rest of my life. Yeah. But that person had a shitty week, and because of what we did, she felt a little better about her life. Right. What else can you say about that, you know?
Yeah, that's... The beautiful thing is like, as one of my friends will say, like, you never know where the ripples land. You know, we're all throwing stones in a pond, and those ripples go out to places. You just never know where it's going to end up. And you know, again, through the wonders of modern technology, you just never know where this stuff is going to. You never know who's going to hear it. You never know who's going to connect with it. But
Okay, yeah, that was great. Polar opposite direction of what was just said.
But that's the beautiful thing about music. You can go
either way. You can be a bunch of clowns or can get real serious. And so I'm gonna be a clown. So I've got to tour Russia twice, and
we can turn the train up if you want. Can I get more train on my monitor? Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Sorry. Less. I had to laugh because it's
a lot going on right now. So we're in the Urals in like central Russia. We're near I'll just leave all the cities out. But we're staying in this. We played a big show in this big city in central Russia, and then we're going out to this small town, and we go out, and it's like our host is this Russian guy. And he kind of like seems to own like a lot of the town, or just a lot of the stuff in the town. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just pointing it out to us, and that's why I notice it, because he's like, "Oh, that's mine, and that's mine." Right. Blah blah blah. And we're staying with him, and we had a concert that night at this theater, and then this big dinner, and it's this big like banquet style dinner, and then like Russian culture, like toasting is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do a toast, it's a shot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like not uncommon to hit like these meals also, it's several courses, and like part of the thing is you eat pickled food. Mm-hmm. And that helps kind of soak up some of the booze and like make you not just die. But it's like someone had told us that like, oh yeah, you can hit 20 toasts. I'm like, word? So
wow.
We end up, I don't know, we hit 50 or something. It wasn't 50, but it was like, it felt like just some horrible number. Yeah. And we're, I've got two translators with me. It's a group of Russians, and then my bandmates are one by one going to bed. And I'm just sticking through. I'm like, I'm doing this till the end, baby. Like, let's do it. I'll talk all night. Like, you know, I'm not going to be I'm gonna be the last one out of here with these Russians. And, they were great. They're like the nicest people ever. And at one point, my translator had stopped really translating everything they were saying.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, I'll just give you like a nice little sum up. And like one was like, he said he likes you, but he talked for like 5 minutes. And then he put his hand out at the end of it and we shook hands. And that happened like a couple more times, and I wouldn't get an explanation. I didn't know what I was shaking on, but I didn't really think anything of it. I thought I was just kind of dapping him up, like old man style. And then in the morning, I'm like at breakfast, and like, Jack, what did you do last night? I'm like, I don't know. I was just like up all night with the guys and a couple of everyone that works here. And they're like, well, he really liked you, and he said it would be an honor if you had one of his dogs. And then he extended his hand, and you shook on it. And I was like, oh, shit. Well, tell him I don't want it. He's like, yeah, I don't even do that here. That's like, no, that'd be very rude. I'm like, all right. Well, what kind of dog is it? And like, oh, it says 100. I'm like, oh, okay, 100 pounds. That's a pretty big dog. Like, kilos. I'm like, what? That's 220 pounds. They're like, yeah, these things are dog. Like, they're bear dogs. Like, they're huge. Yeah, Jesus. Dude. I mean, so I'm like, what? No, man, I don't want that thing. And then, like, the day goes on, and we have another great day. I'm trying to find one of these things. And, like, it, like, they come up later, and they're like, oh, hey, he just said he's giving you another one. I'm like, I don't want another dog, man. That's not, that's what they look like.
Oh, my God. What the fuck is that?
It's called an alibi. They're these Central Asian...
And he
shepherd dog. He bred them. He owned kennels.
Did he want you to buy these dogs?
No, he was giving them to me.
It was a gift.
It was a gift. And so then later he's like, oh, you know, we should go ride horses. I'm like, all right.
Do you mean the dogs?
And someone was like, we should shoot machine guns. I'm like, this day's getting crazy. And
just go pull a robbery somewhere.
So we go out and we like drive. We're in the middle of nowhere, anyways. We go like further out and we're like trying to like ride these horses. And these guys come over and they're like in fatigues and they're riding bareback. And I'm like, dude, we are such pussies. They are probably looking at us like we are nothing. Like we're out here just like in our jeans and like no one really knows how to ride a horse.
Yeah.
I'd been on one 15 years earlier. And like rode it around the mountains in Wyoming.
Yeah.
But I was in like a line of horses. Yeah, I was by myself.
Right. I get it. Yeah.
And
I
like,
was there.
Yeah, Jim was there also on a horse. Yeah. And like, none of the guys in my band can even ride like at all. Like, so they're like being led around like a child on a pony, and everyone is just looking at us like we are such worthless sacks of shit. And I'm like, fuck this, like, I'm doing this again. So like, I already stayed up all night with these guys before because everyone else dipped out. Like, I'm gonna ride this horse, and I take off on this horse like through the woods, and I am scared shitless because there's this other Russian guy yelling at me, and he knows I don't speak it, and I don't know what's going on, and the horse is only responding to commands in Russian, so I can't even get this thing to stop. Yeah. And then the same guy shows us. So we had a. It was a long day. I felt like I got hit by a car by the end of the day. And the guy who gave me the horses, the dogs, shows up in the next city, which was like hours away. And I go outside the venue, and he's standing there. I'm like, "Hey, man, so good to see you." And
you again.
And he like says a bunch of stuff again. He knows I don't understand, and puts his hand out again. And I'm like, "Dude, neat." Like, I learned some Russian at this point. He's like, kind of does it again. I'm like, "Oh shit! All right." And I shake his hand and go back inside. And someone, the translator, comes over like, "Jack, what did we say? What did you do?" And I'm like, "I don't know. You told me not to shake this guy. I don't know. I just shook his hand." He said, "I don't know."
Were
know
they what he fucking said. With you at this point?
No. He goes, "He just told me about all the custom stuff that you're going to need to go through to get the horse back." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Dude, he got you that fucking horse." And I'm like, and I was like, "Is he fucking with me?" I'm like, "No, he's dead serious. He's talked to me for 10 minutes about like how you get a horse through customs going
to America."
And I was like, "Get me the fuck out of this city right now. I got to go now. And so I didn't come home with, 2,000 pounds of livestock. They're in central Russia somewhere. But that was pretty crazy. I went back to Russia the following year, but I wasn't in that part.
Dude, you win the award for that's the craziest story that anyone's ever told on this podcast.
So, but it was a weird story.
That's awesome.
I was at you ever heard of UCB? Like Upright Citizens Brigade? Yeah. So I was one of my best buds lives out in LA, and I went out there last year, and he had all this stuff planned for me, and one was go see a improv night with UCB.
Yeah.
We got up there, and it was like some of my favorite guys ever. They do a show.
Oh, where, improv, right? Improv stuff? Upright Citizens Brigade.
It's an improv group. Like half of SNL has come out of there, and lots of big shows. And so, do you know who Rob Riggle is?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that night, there were four guys. It was Rob Riggle, Rob Hubble, who you might not know by name, but if I showed you a picture of him, you'd recognize him.
Sounds familiar.
And this guy named Jason Manzoukas.
I know Jason Manzoukas, yeah. Yeah.
And then
Rafi.
Hilarious.
I can't remember the other guy's name, but he's also hilarious. And like, the program for the night was, tell us a crazy story in 30 seconds, and then if we like it, we're going to run with it for like a 20-minute improv. Who's got something that's going to make me shit my pants right here?
Shit, that's great.
I was like, I got it, baby! And they didn't end up going with it. They got Rafi, Jason Manzoukas, was like, this story sounds pretty good. And they went with some guy who was like, I had sex with a witch. And they're like, oh, that's good. And he's like, I still think we should go with the Russia thing. He got outvoted. So,
That's amazing.
It's pretty good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for first of all, for reaching out to me to be on the show, number one. Thanks for taking the time to do it. I'm going to play your song at the end of the show here.
Thank you.
Keep me posted on when the record is done and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Come out, and I'll just kind of do an update on it and that kind of thing. And
we're playing at the Back Corner on Wednesday, April 24th with True Villains.
Okay,
cool.
Good. This will be
up Sunday, yeah.
So, yeah. So, anybody, if you made it this far and you like our tunes, please come out on the 24th. Yes. It's a free show. True Villains are great.
And if you're listening to this next year, you're too late.
Yes, exactly. And awesome. The Ivins, IVINS on social media and iTunes,
they'll be listening
Spotify.
To this years down the road because it's going to blow up and then it's going to be in syndication.
It's everywhere.
Like people doing deep dives on Joe Rogan's podcast. You
pull up
stuff from 11 years ago.
We can only hope. We can only hope.
Buddy.
Thank you guys very much, man.
Absolutely.
This is great.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
All right, I hope you enjoyed my chat with the Ivins. I had a great time with those guys. You can find more info at theivins.com. That is T-H-E-I-V-I-N-S.com.
They're also The Ivans on Instagram and Twitter, and they have a YouTube channel as well. Just search for The Ivans there. Do me a favor and give me a follow on the socials as well. I'm at Michael J. Music on Facebook and Twitter, and at Michael J. Official on Instagram. We also have a PayPal donation button on our website, tiopod.com. Consider dropping us a few bucks if you're so inclined to keep this show free and keep us running. You don't have to donate, but I will love you forever if you do. We're going to take the next week off to put together something extra special for you for our 50th episode, so that'll be coming your way in 2 weeks from now. Hard to believe. I'm going to leave you here with the brand new single just released by The Ivans. This is a song called Certain. Thanks again so much for joining me and for sticking with me here, everybody. I will see you all in 2 weeks for our 50th episode here on Turn It On.
Oxygen is disinterest. To my voice, I'm an ending, let me be.